Hi, this is Stuart Wilde once more. Welcome back. In this audio set, we're going to talk about the mysteries of the morph, grace, and your mirror self. I should first ask you to bear with me as I tell you how I came upon it, and how I came to realize that by your knowing about that world, it will transform your spiritual evolution, and it will allow you eventually to walk into or peer into other worlds. But before I explain how I got to that mirror world, first let me tell you the story of how the sight of it came about. In March 2001, I was at my house in Australia. There were about 15 people there, and suddenly something very strange happened. We were sitting in the front room where there were a number of day beds, like those very large, wide couches and sofas you see in movies and large Indian houses. Suddenly on the face of one of the women, there appeared a very beautiful geometric pattern. It was circles and dots and triangles of many vibrant colors. The mysterious patterns oscillated and moved and shimmered, and then they spread down her neck to cover her shoulders. It was really awesome and mysterious to watch. There were no light effects in the rooms or sunlight from outside that could have caused it, and the patterns were not static like a shadow might be. They oscillated and shimmered and changed positions all of the time. It was quite a hot afternoon, and one of the men had his t-shirt off, and he soon realized that he had the same kind of patterns forming on his back. Gradually, over a period of 15 minutes or so, everyone had the geometric images come over their bodies, and every pattern was different. Some had blue stars, and others had little red hearts, and some even had leopard skin patterns. There were all manner of possible fractal images and geometrics. They were as clear as anything to see. This was the first time we ever experienced what became known later as the morph. It's a transdimensional phenomena, an overlay whereby a room changes its imprint or ambience in the construct of space and time, and the surrounding reality takes on a new form. It is as if the room exists in two states at the same time, normal and solid-looking, and abnormal and not solid at the same time. The walls go soapy-looking, and the floor seems to become misty and disappears at times, even though you know you're standing on it. Hazy striations begin to swirl in the air, and they float together to form vortexes and circles that you imagine you can travel down. They seem to lead to another world. What we found to our amazement was that even our bodies seem to go from solid to not solid at all. I know this might sound nuts, but myself and others have since seen the morph many thousands of times since that first time in March 2001, so the experience wasn't a one-off event. And I ought to add here that we weren't on anything dodgy like hallucinogenics or drugs of any kind, just in case you're wondering. Everybody was stone-cold sober and straight on that fateful afternoon that the morph first happened. It's a new world, a supernatural one, descending on our 3D world. It's the ultimate transcendental experience. For me, it's the most exciting thing that ever happened. It has completely changed our view of spirituality and extrasensory perception. The morph is for you and me and everyone. I'll explain how you get there in a minute, but first let me finish the morph story. What we found on that day when the patterns appeared was that our heads and our faces became less and less solid-looking. You see the bone structure and shape of a person's head, and then their face started to go hazy, and part of it would disappear completely. It would morph into another dimension. At times we found that we could see right through each other. Part of each of us was disappearing. It wasn't scary, it was just very intriguing. We found that the morph was everywhere, all of the time. When the morph is very strong, you can easily see it, even in bright daylight, but usually it's much easier to see in a darkened room. It often looks like dry rain. If you want to see it, you have to learn to relax, and you have to learn to meditate if you don't already do so. For all the dimensions and experiences beyond this world, take the low brainwave pattern of the meditation state to get there. Seeing the morph is nothing more than knowing and trusting it is there, and deciding you want to see it, and knowing you'll see it if you care to. Try it when you're a little bit tired, at the end of the working day, because that is when your brain cells oscillate at slower speeds. It's in the lower wave band of theta, which is 4 to 7 cycles per second, that it becomes clear to see. Sit in a darkened room, Or you can lie on a bed if you like and focus on the idea that you'd like to see the morph, knowing it is everywhere, so it must be around you right now. Try this process at night. Have the room almost dark with the lights off, but make sure there's just enough light through a crack in the door for you to be able to make out your hand when it is outstretched 2 or 3 feet in front of your face. Now stare up at where the walls of the room meet the ceiling. Then bring your concentration back towards you, so you are staring up at an angle of 45 degrees at the halfway place in the air of the room that is between the ceiling and your eyes. And suddenly you'll see the morph there hovering. It is full of swirls and sparkling lights that look very much like small glowworms. We call the twinkling lights the speckled ambience. It evokes a sense of bliss. It's so beautiful. It calls to some very deep spiritual part of you. It's the grace of eternity that we all belong to. Also in the morph, you will see fast-moving diagonal lines crossing the room. That's the dry rain. Sometimes you might see a flash of light crossing your vision. It's like silent lightning. Once you see the morph for the first time, you'll see it all the time. You will also realize why you are further ahead than you believe yourself to be. You may have known for a while now that something is going on with the metaphysical reality of this world and you, but maybe you haven't had the right information to explain it. Sometimes the morph will be stronger than at other times, but it never leaves. So many of you have already experienced the morph without ever realizing it. It's here to change and heal the soul of the world. If you're wondering why would you bother with all of this morph and what reference or what relevance does it have on your spiritual journey, what I'd say to you is that it represents the arrival of the feminine. Our world is a yang world. It's a world of up, it's a world of men, it's a world of war and power and politics and acquisitions and materialism. And the feminine spirit is the arrival of softness, compassion, healing, transcendence, ESP, extraordinary happenings like the ones that have been described before, where people dematerialized in a sitting room at my home. So we're looking at the arrival of the opposite force. You could say, well, it doesn't interest me, Stewie, but in a way, it's bound to interest you because it's going to intrude in your life whether you like it or not. So, for example, this morph business has been around since the beginning of time because there are instances in the Bible where Jesus just appeared in front of his disciples, mysteriously sort of materializing in front of them. And pals of mine have spontaneously levitated, where they're lying on the bed and suddenly they come up, interestingly, they come up head first at an angle with their head high and their feet low, and eventually their feet are the last things to leave the bed. And they'd be up there for several minutes and then come back down again. It's a mystery. I've never done levitation, so I can't say I'm an expert on it. But I know two people that have levitated 3 times between them. And these are things that we've heard from Hindu manuscripts, Buddhist manuscripts, and this example that I gave before from the Bible of Jesus just appearing and disappearing. These transdimensional worlds have been here since the beginning of time, but in our cerebral, logical, very yang world, we lost touch with the hidden mystery, the memory of trees, as I spoke of, the memory of the imprint that is all around us. We've lost it. Of course, we all know that in quantum physics, we are, for the most part, empty space. The nucleus of the atom is the only part that has any sort of reality to it. And the nucleus is minute small. I mean, your entire body wouldn't fit into a thimble if we could collect all the nuclei and put them in there. You know, you're a dot on a page. So the idea that you're solid is only really our opinion, because we need to be important, so we like to feel we're solid, but we're not actually even solid, which is sort of interesting, because then you think like, well, if you're suffering from a liver complaint, you're suffering from a liver complaint of a liver that isn't actually there, which is sort of weird. You think, well, how could I be suffering because the thing isn't actually there? It's a thought form. It's very ephemeral, the liver. So then that says, wow, we can perhaps just talk to this liver and ask it what it wants, you know, and it might say, well, I don't want so much whiskey. that's not helping me much, but I would like carrot juice or something, you know. It's like we can be so much more in touch with our humanity and with our physical body. As the feminine energy comes into this earth plane, you have to imagine it as if you were lacing the fingers of your right hand through the fingers of your left hand. She comes in the spaces between our reality. She's in the gap. So she completes us. We can't be complete only in a yang state. And even if you're in a woman, you live in a yang world and you probably have to hurtle out to work every day in a yang fashion and feed onto the freeway in the right place and feed off in the right place, and you have to perform and be. So you may be feminine in your sexuality, in your body, but you're living in and under the domain of male rules. The feminine spirit, she's moving in between the male. She's in between the molecules of our masculinity. In the olden days, many, many, many thousands of years ago, there was a group of beings that appeared mysteriously in northern Italy, and they became known eventually as the Etruscan Empire, and they were centered around a small town in what is now Tuscany that was called Volterra. They had temples, and in those temples, the healers would lie down next to the person that was sick, and the healer would dematerialize and go inside the sick person, perform an operation, and come back out again. So here we're looking at the spaces between the masculine, and here she arrives, the feminine, and she comes in, and we have the potential to heal each other. We have the potential of being able to place our hand inside somebody and take out cells that might be cancerous. In the same way as Neo in the Matrix film puts his hand inside Trinity and takes out the bullet when she was shot. In that state in the Matrix film, he goes holographic and she goes holographic. And in order to make that entry inside another person, you have to get into a holographic state. I've only ever had it happen to me once. We think we're separate, but in fact we're all one. There's only one person on this whole earth. And, well, there's two, in fact. There are two people on this earth. There's one male and one female. There's only one male in the whole universe, and there's only one female in the whole universe. And we're all part of that oneness. Now let me say this, the sight of the morph is not something reserved for high adepts or Hindu holy men or great spiritual leaders, the purple poobah of the seventh ray and all that malarkey. It's for everyone, and thousands of people have already seen the morph, and some, like you, will learn to use it. I'll show you how to get started. Nothing like this has ever happened before in the history of psychic powers and metaphysical happenings. It's new. And lots of mystics and holy people and the Hopi Indians have predicted a new age of enlightenment. And they were not wrong. It arrived. This truly is a new era for humanity. Another way to see the morph is raise your arm in the air and watch the end of your fingers again in a darkened room and see if you can see flashes of energy coming off the ends of your fingertips. The morph takes oxygen out of the air, so it never comes down lower than 2 to 3 feet from your face. If you cup your hand and make a C shape with your forefinger and your thumb, try and see if you can see a small tube between the bottom of your finger and the top of your thumb. It is illustrated in the CD-ROM provided. That little tube is a vortex. Try putting a finger in the middle of the C that your forefinger and thumb make. And as you push through the middle of that sea, you will feel it tickling slightly, or it may feel slightly warm, as it passes through another vortex. This morph thing is alive, and it also rejuvenates your cells. One day, my hands started to prickle like crazy, and I watched over a period of 20 minutes when all my cells rejuvenated, and brown spots and pimples and faint blotches on my hand disappeared, and the skin became creamy looking. As if my hand had gone back 30 years in time. The gift of the morph will become a great power in this world, for when it showed me the rejuvenation of my left hand, it didn't happen on my right hand, so once the process was over, I could clearly see the difference between the two. In case you're wondering, the morph might have begun the healing process on you already, So many of you have experienced the morph without ever realizing it. With the morph comes various body sensations. The most common begins with a twitching of the eye. This can last a few days or even weeks. At first it worried me. I wondered what was wrong. I didn't know it was a morph thing. Then one day it ended. Then there is what we call the buzz. It's a low-volume, high-pitched buzzing sensation that seems to move around your head. Often you imagine it behind you, as if it is hovering there, 3 or 4 inches behind the back of your skull, at about the base of your cranium. You'll sometimes hear the buzz move from one side of your head to another, just like when you flip the speaker direction on a stereo system, and you hear that whoosh of the music going from side to side. The buzz can be quiet and soft and gentle, and then other times it gets real loud. Don't worry, it ebbs and flows. You'll get used to it. If you have the buzz, it's a gift, a grace that will develop over time. It's energy, information coming from another world. The shamans of South America called the buzz the airplane. It seems to be part of the transdimensional journey, an information download. Now, there's a type of ringing in your ear that is called tinnitus. That is very different to the buzz, as tinnitus is a medical condition in which the ringing is very clearly heard in one or both of your ears, while the buzz is more spatially located. It moves around all the time. I've had it on and off for 4 years. Sometimes it stops for weeks at a time, and then it starts up again. At times the buzz is less electric and loud, and it goes to a soft shushing sound. White noise, it's often called. When the white noise comes, it's usually accompanied by a sense of bliss. Then there is another audio sensation that you may have already heard, and that is what I call formatting. It's a very faint tick-tick sound. It seems to be limited to one ear. It reminds me of the sound floppy disks made in the olden days, when you had to format them before use. I don't know as yet what the formatting sound represents, but again, it feels like more downloads. But I do know what it looks like, and there's a diagram of it in the CD-ROM provided. Sometimes you will also hear the soft clicking of drumsticks. This is usually due to anomalies or fluctuations in the electromagnetic field around you. It's heard a lot in poltergeist cases, which it has been discovered may not be the actions of evil spirits, but the warping of reality in places where strong electromagnetic fields cross, like in a valley where there are microwave phone towers on the surrounding hills. You may also have experienced what we call the flutter. It's the sensation that your nervous system is fluttering slightly. In men, it often starts between the legs, between the ankles, and in women, they seem to first experience the flutter in the chest area. I remember in the early days telling a doctor about the flutter, and he looked at me completely blank. He had no idea what I was talking about. And I've known people that got really scared thinking they had Parkinson's disease. But the flutter is not an ailment. It is very similar to the prickling that I felt on the back of my hand. It's a wonderful gift. If you get the flutter, it is marvelous. It's a higher oscillation of life force, or etheric as we call it. Your cells begin to rebuild themselves, taking on a higher vibrancy. Also, we notice that people that have had the flutter over a period of years all look very bright and lucent, and often they begin to look younger and younger as time goes by. There are about 100 sensations of the morph, so I can't deal with all of them here, but some include a neck flip that occurs at night as you go to sleep, and a series of electric shocks in various places in your body, whereby your muscles twitch. Sometimes they're so strong, they can almost throw you off the bed. These elects, as I call them, are big inputs of energy coming from another world. I'll talk about these sensations more later, but the morph to me is full of grace and beauty. And yet some of it is slightly weird because it's a world that we know very little about. If at first you don't see the morph right away, don't worry. It could be because of two things. Some people are very cerebral. They are the world's thinkers. They have never been used to a world of subtle feelings, and they don't believe in the unseen. Often these people don't have visions or dreams whatsoever. They live just in a world of intellectual ideas. For them, everything has to follow logic, or they feel exposed and unsafe and open to ridicule. If you're like that, give yourself time. You need to trust and let go, as your mind may be very bright, but it will never get to a place beyond enlightenment. For the transdimensional world we have discovered doesn't follow any logic that we understand. There's nothing wrong with intellect and mind and logic, but it eventually runs out of answers. There are only ever questions and more questions. Sometimes people that are very bright and intelligent, like university professors, have such powerful minds, they gradually make their minds into God. Thinking becomes a religion for them. If you're like that, your life will be frustrating and hard. For the only way humans can evolve beyond the mind is to enter into the supernatural. That world is not logical. It's very fleeting. And perception, as you know, is very subtle. Some people are so coarse and cynical in their energy that they have no perception or very little. Their life becomes fearful because they have difficulty in seeing the future, and they don't believe that there is a grace or a flow of divine light coming into their life. The second reason for not being able to see the morph is that a long time ago you may have forgotten how to look. When you were a child, you would look and you would see. You would see the gap, the spaces between things. So start to look for what is not there. Look into the spaces between the leaves. Look and see if you can halt time. There's a sensation that we call fat time, when the experience of time goes very long and wide. If you know that feeling, you will have seen the edge of the gap. Start to look in the space between reality, between the leaves of the trees and so forth, and start to listen to hear what people are saying when they're not talking. What is in their silent dialogue? You might also need a bit more of the flow of the God force or grace in your life. Without that, you'll be a bit blind for a while. You will feel a bit flat and ill at ease. You may be looking for energy to sustain you from outside sources. Food, drugs, alcohol, sex, pornography, predatory ways, even thieving and shoplifting. Anything that brings energy from outside, like incessantly watching TV. We do that because we seek momentary excitement. If you're very cerebral, then you have to pray that the powers that be give you at least one experience that you can believe in, that will blow away the walls of logic. You'll get it if you pray for it, and if you aren't too arrogant in the way that you pretend to know it all. As you begin to believe, even if you can't see well right now, you can gradually pull the hidden power into your life, and so the supernatural becomes more normal. Learn to sit or lie in silence, in the semi-dark, and trust. You should keep a little dream journal where you write down any dreams you remember, or visions, or even sudden strange sensations. Sometimes you'll be walking along and something will trigger a big realization. You should jot that down, and bit by bit it will all come to form a pattern. It's your higher knowing from an inner world talking to you. The trick is to embark on a plan to raise your energy and make yourself more aware of the gap. If your energy goes up, you'll feel more secure and less scared, and you'll perceive more. There's a mass of information in the morph waiting for you to connect with it, and it will talk to you, I promise you. And even if at first you can't see, then you might have to create a threshold experience for yourself. Here's one way. Set aside a few days when you're off work to be on your own and in silence, out in nature, up in the mountains. You might need to pull away from the stress and worry of your life and the day-to-day circumstances, for that can warp your image of self and corrupt your perception of life. This is because when we live in our emotions and our thinking, we lose connection with spirit and the sacred nature of who we really are and what this life is about, which is remembering who you are. A simple example would be if you have allowed your life to become very repetitive and boring. Soon your mind comes to believe that nothing unusual could ever happen and that life is always flat and dull. What you believe is what you see, and it's also what you get. So that dullness and a lack of imagination eventually becomes all that you see. Sometimes your relationships are loving and they sustain you, and sometimes they're so scary and so toxic you lose sight of who you are. You forget to tend to yourself. You become a slave to the ideals of another, to what you think they want from you. By getting away, you rediscover yourself. You get to turn within and see what light is in there and how to guard it better. I take time out of my own quite regularly. Sometimes I go on the road for months at a time, on my own, just traveling about. It's vital to me. And yes, it can be a lonely journey, but in the quietness, or when walking in nature, I see beyond the boundaries of my life, and I see things I never saw before. I also fast quite regularly as a way of bringing my energy up quickly. Sometimes I go without food for just 3 days, and sometimes I fast from 5 to 9 days. Now, if you have low blood pressure problems and other health concerns like diabetes, you shouldn't fast without discussing it with your healthcare professional, because there is a small percentage of people that don't do well by fasting, and yet many others can benefit from it greatly. It opens up a doorway inside you very quickly. Your energy becomes instantly more rarefied and your mind goes quiet, and you become softer and more spiritual and more aware of other worlds and unseen beings. A threshold experience like 3 days of fasting in silence on your own can carry you from coarse and asleep to aware and awake. Then suddenly you'll see the morph, even though you were looking at it all the time without seeing it before. It's there, and the morph acts as a lens for you to see inside these other worlds. You may ask yourself, why do you need to go beyond enlightenment and why would you bother to make this journey? And I suppose the resounding reason is that if you look inside your soul, you'll see that there's something missing. Morpheus in The Matrix describes it as a splinter in your mind. You always know that there's something that isn't working. There's some bit that you don't know, that you haven't found, that you're sort of wandering around looking for the key to everything without knowing what the key looks like or what it is that you're actually searching for. So the reason for this journey beyond enlightenment is really to arrive at the complete you, the authentic you, the whole you. Our human body is small, I mean sort of 5 to 6 feet tall or slightly taller, but in fact, deep down, we're vast. We're bigger than the universe, the whole of the Milky Way. You could hold in your hand. So you're a microcosm, and then there's a macrocosm version of you that is absolutely enormous. And so it becomes sort of part of the remembering. And so the reason to make the journey and the reason to go into the unknown, and of course, when you say unknown to people, they tend to get a little worried that you're going to be whizzing them off into some sort of totally chaotic place. But the journey into the unknown does take a certain amount of bravery. But then the yearning, the nostalgia for eternity that I speak of, is this thing where we yearn to be whole. We live almost entirely in a yang world. We have no experience of yin whatsoever. And then the little yin that we do experience when we're out fishing or in the forest or just moments where we're playing with our children on the beach on a sunset, that's the only yin we ever experience, you know, 1 week a year, not even the whole of the week. And so without the feminine, we aren't complete. And so the morph represents the arrival of the feminine and the journey beyond enlightenment, which of course is an ego trip enlightenment. It's a spiritual elitism. It doesn't exist. But the journey beyond enlightenment is saying, hey, what I want is completeness. What I want is wholeness. What I want is to arrive back to where we all came from. Some of you may ask, why am I on the journey and why am I not necessarily pushing you to go? And I'm just doing that out of my typically English politeness, because I don't want to scare you or challenge you or make you want to feel inadequate. But of course you'll go on the journey. And the weird thing is, you don't go on the journey. The journey comes to you. So it's like you never go on the journey. The journey comes to you. It's the same with bilocation, tell you the truth. Bilocation is the ability to go into trance and move your body a great distance in seconds by sort of bending space-time. Well, all the adepts or the amateurs that try it attempt to travel from, let's say, Texas to France. But in fact, the only way you can bilocate is as if you can pull France to you. In other words, at the point where you make this trans-dimensional transition, Paris comes and gets you. It's really weird, but it is exactly the opposite. How you arrive beyond enlightenment is not to strive to arrive at it, because in the striving, you engage these yang emotions, the intensity of your intention, the intensity of driving and pushing and wanting to arrive, the intensity of, say, not feeling good enough. So you think, well, if I take on these spiritual practices, I'll be better and more holy. But this journey has nothing to do with better and holy. Better and holy is completely irrelevant. You know, you can't arrive at God other than in your imperfect state, because we are imperfect. And so in the striving, you'll never get there. It's almost as if the more you strive for the Holy Grail, the more the Holy Grail hops up the road in front of you. That's why there's so many people that are so desperate to have like one spiritual experience. If only Jesus would appear on the refrigerator, you know? If the Mary would appear on this tortilla, we could sell it on eBay for 20 grand. But in their desperation to achieve that Holy Grail, they just push it up the road in front of them. The Holy Grail always stays, let's say, 8 to 10 yards in front of them because they're pushing. Because in pushing, you are operating out of the yang. So the intensity of you wanting it forces it to keep away from you. But when you're no longer forcing it, it comes and finds you. The trick is to not push. It's not so much retreat, because you don't want your feelings to be any less than before. You don't want to create a sense of defeat. And you don't want to create a sense of inactivity. Like I'll sit here as a lump of dough blob in the corner and wait. But it's mostly not pushing to arrive. It's a gentle intention. You're wandering along. You're prompted to read this book. You're prompted to purchase these tapes. You're prompted to call a friend. You see something strange and you think, wow, I don't know why, but I'm pulled to the Native American and I'm going to go to visit the Anastasi ruins, or, you know, just these promptings inside of you, or you're pulled to the shamans of Brazil, or you're pulled to, you know, like these places where you hear these things. And again, that's this mirror self you saying, come on, Baba, get over to Brazil. That's where the doorway is for you. But the Brazilian doorway is the Scottish doorway, is a book in a library for somebody else. It knows. This whole world is so perfectly organized. There's no chance. There's no accident. Nothing is misinterpreted. Nothing goes wrong. It is all absolutely perfectly organized. That's sort of like the divine plan, I suppose. The way to make this journey is passively, and that's why women never experience anything like the amount of fear that the men experience. Because we men are not passive, we're way more controlling. It's the natural yang thing to control and to organize and to stimulate, and we put boundaries on everything and we want to rule the world. And if we can't rule the world, we want to rule the town, the village. If we can't rule that, we want to rule the street, the neighborhood, or just our families. We want to rule. The women are much more passive, and the whole thing is this passiveness. So it isn't frightening unless you hold on. It isn't frightening unless you resist. Yes, strange things will happen, but allow them. You just allow it to happen. And what you'll know from experience after a while, if you're a little bit of a spiritual warrior and you've been on the path a bit, is that none of this stuff ever lasts more than 15, 20 minutes. And you'll get some really bizarre sensation. And it's gone in 3 days. It's like if you come home and somebody's stolen your stereo system, you can go into a panic and a rage. Or you could just say, well, they've come for the system, haven't they? Somebody's come to collect the system. Everything you own, you've only borrowed from God. Like it's a big rental yard in the sky, you know? And you go in, and everything you borrowed. You aren't taking any of it with you. You're just borrowing it for the space of this lifetime or a few years. And it's the same with your stereo system. You can go mad because it's been stolen. Or you could say, they've come to collect this system, you know? Somebody else is borrowing my system now. At the beginning of this series, I offered you the potential of an extraordinary journey. You don't have to accept that potential. You can continue along this life that you've built for yourself. But it will be regimented. It will be TikTok. It will be boring. It will oppress you. I mean, most people figure out a way to oppress themselves and or kill themselves rather than change. And it's not for me ever to say that is wrong or that is right. I don't know what's right for you. But where you feel the splinter in your mind, where you feel the frustration, where you feel that inadequacy, then that will impel you to move forward. You know, like I remember 10 and 15 years ago, I would lay in my bed at night and I would cry because I think my life is so utterly futile. And in those days, I had an ivory tower better than anybody else's, you know. I had a 30-room mansion and servants and cooks and gardeners, and I had millions in the bank, and I was rocking around like a pop star, stretch limos and all this stuff, suites in the fanciest hotels. And all of that was fine. It was a wonderful experience. But in the end, I gave it all away. I gave the mansion away. I spent most of the money going from one place to the next. And what was left of my money, I gave it away. And I eventually went with a suitcase and $50,000 that I kept for myself. And I went on the journey. And I'm still on the journey now, 5 years later. My ivory tower was my enlightenment in a way, because at the end I realized I didn't want to keep it up. And circumstances sort of conspired to collapse my ivory tower anyway. There's a psychological flip you have to make. People think that higher is up, but energy that is moving faster is not really going up, it's going sideways. If you ever meet a man or a woman that truly knows these worlds that I'm speaking about, you will notice that they've come off the roof of the tower and they're going sideways, not up. Sideways, you may ask. Yep, sideways. Now you can troll through the Bible and great works and all of the New Age, and you can read that and perhaps benefit from the ideas of great teachers, but you'll never find people that will tell you that the etheric goes sideways. This is because they all think the same, and they all think as the ego would, an ego that has lived on the tower all of its life. It's obviously up. It must be the right way, up. Higher and higher, more and more. The fool only understands up, but sideways is the right answer. It took thousands of years before we found that out. Jesus might have ascended into heaven after the crucifixion. I can't say if that is true or not. Christians have to take it on faith. But I can tell you this. If Jesus ascended into heaven, he didn't go up, as there's no up to go to. If you go up, you get into altitude problems and your lungs collapse. If he went anywhere, he went sideways. He ascended to heaven sideways. And maybe he dematerialized. That is because the doorway to the spiritual heaven we all seek is at 90 degrees to us, at right angles. Light travels in a straight line at about 300,000 kilometers per second. But what people don't usually realize is that it also has a sideways motion at 90 degrees to the straight line ahead that light is taking as it travels through space. This is a zigzag sideways motion to light, as well as the forward motion of light. There is a diagram in the CD-ROM to help you visualize this. The zigzag motion of light is described in a special type of mathematics that is called the mathematics of imaginary numbers. If you wanted to dematerialize and enter into a heavenly dimension, you would have to learn to slide across sideways. You have to follow the transverse wave of light. You can trust me on that for two reasons. First, everyone that has ever tried to make it by going up failed miserably. And secondly, the sideways motion is the only way you can ever go backwards in time, as that is the only way you can go faster than light. Now, it's not your physical body that will travel faster than light, but it is your etheric body, your life force. To evolve beyond the TikTok world, you have to think out of the box and fall back on yourself in that sideways world. Let me explain. The laws of light refer to the forward motion of light in a vacuum. But the sideways motion of light is not very fast at all. In fact, the waves of the sideways motion oscillate at about 4,000 to 8,000 angstroms a second. Each pulse wave is known as an angstrom. So you have to imagine 4,000 to 8,000 zigzag lines crossing the main light beam every second. If you can oscillate your life force, the etheric, sideways at over 8,000 cycles a second, you will actually be going faster than light. Nothing physical can move faster than light, but the human etheric can move sideways faster than light. And that has now been proven in the morph over and over. The sideways motion will grant you a perception of the future, and you will need to know that because you have to be able to understand the karma of nations and people, and you will have to make critical decisions at exactly the right time, so you will have to be able to see the future. Don't worry, it's easy. So when you lie down to meditate, or even if you meditate sitting in a chair, first imagine yourself sliding off to the right. It's a creative visualization. And even if at first you can't get your etheric to respond to that sideways order, you can make it happen over time by imagining it. And the etheric always follows your imagination in the end. You see how clever this system is? The Tao is all up, more and more gratification, more illusion, and all the stress and futile depression and the struggle to sustain self-importance. But once the tower comes down and the ego is tamed and sometimes humbled, you have nowhere to go but to travel sideways. This takes you towards a warmer existence with other people and towards the animals and towards Gaia and the healing of the planet and all the natural domains of softness, love, compassion and acceptance. And sideways takes you to where you eventually know that you haven't got a clue. In fact, the more you grow and become truly transdimensional, the more you will know for certain that you don't know very much at all. None of us do. All I'm telling you here is how to get to the 90-degree nowhere land. I can't begin to describe the fractal worlds beyond the door where the higher beings exist. They're from beyond the void. And as I said at the beginning of this series, at the very end of this journey, there's nothing, just the eternal void. And that void is nothing and everything. Looking back from that void, enlightenment looks silly. It's just a term invented by spiritual elitists. You have to engage the ego and your mind to be enlightened. You don't need it. It's far too heavy. In the void, there is nothing in every direction. In the vastness of nothing, what point of reference would you use to decide if you're up or down, enlightened or not enlightened? Let me explain quickly. Pause and imagine you're in the void and that there is nothing. No family, no friends, no sounds, no up, no down, no hope, blank, nothing. The way to visualize it is to imagine looking down and seeing an endless darkness and blackness below you. That will give you the right impression. Or you could ask in a meditation, show me the void, but you have to hang on to your hat if the beings come to handle your request. Anyway, after the void, I could see that humanity's insistence on the ivory tower looks silly. It's just childlike, not real, worthless really. And all the little things of life look gracious and marvelous, and they're worth everything. Make it a part of your energy plan to get rid of one aspect of the ivory tower every day if possible. Today, sell the second car. Tomorrow, give away some of your designer clothes. And the next day, liberate yourself of something or someone. Every day, some part of the ivory tower goes. And then get rid of a bad habit. And then lovingly settle an argument with someone. And the following day, sell some more of your accumulated rubbish and use that to settle a debt and so forth. I did an inventory of the people in my life. You might want to do the same as part of your threshold plan. Write down the names of all the people that you know and deal with that impact your life. Family, friends, business associates. Then sit quietly and bring them up in your mind's eye. How many really love you and support you and accept you unconditionally? And how many are a waste of time? Or they feed off you emotionally? Or they drain you energy-wise or money-wise. How many are honest and how many of them are dead dodgy? How many lie to you? I've always found if a person lies about small things, they will eventually lie about big things. And when you come upon a person that doesn't deal with absolute truth in their life, then whatever energy you express in their direction will eventually bring tears and heartache. Embracing the truth is a sideways move. Catch yourself every time you exaggerate or bend the truth, every time you deliberately give people an erroneous impression, or when you offer them faulty facts. Learn to become scrupulously honest. Make a point of noticing when you're in denial and when you're glossing over events, interpreting them in a bent or dodgy way to suit your story. Try to be honest with yourself and agree to live like that in an impeccable way as much as possible. Remember, of course, that none of us is perfect. The reason for all this effort is that over in the mirror world, the you that is in there, that is composed of your subconscious, feelings and impulses, has to operate from the perspective of the authentic soul that you really are. So naturally, it cringes every time you go the other way and you're dishonest or covert, and every time you act dishonestly with yourself or you act outside what is proper and correct. It's trying to prompt you all the time in your dreams, and by firing through subtle feelings that prompt you to go towards what is healthy and truthful and beneficial and away from phony and lies and darkness. Those feelings are stored in the mirror self, which is your eternal spiritual identity. So it's not so much about what happened in this life, it's more about how you felt about what did happen and how your actions in this life affected the feelings of others. In other words, your whole life comes down to a memory of feelings. Some of you have always known it was about the feelings, and perhaps you were scared to say so, fearing ridicule or fearing that you would seem to be slightly dippy and so you would be marginalized. But you were right all along, and the world around us and the one we see on TV is the world of yang and ego and thinking. War, power, money, glamour, fame, up, up, up. These things are seen to be so important and special. And yet in a hyperspace reality, it all matters very little, if at all. It will all be swept away in the end. None of it lasts. Only the human feelings last. And they're stored in your subconscious, which is here and in the mirror self. The mirror self is in effect your soul. That is beautiful. That's where the perpetual long-term memory of you is kept. I think I worked that out before I could actually see the mirror world. Here's how. Ages ago, I began to wonder what mechanism or recording device actually remembers you after the brain ceases. Obviously, a lifetime of events and struggle here on Earth would be meaningless if there was no mechanism for remembering what actually happened to you. There couldn't be an afterlife without a mechanism for remembering, and yet no religion or spiritual philosophy in the world has ever properly explained what holds or retains the perpetual memory of you after death. But via the morph, we saw that we're all in the mirror world before we die, in an alter ego, in a mirror world identity. Then the remembering problem was suddenly solved. Once your brain ceases functioning, the memory of you here is lost, but your mirror self in the spirit world opposite us has all the information anyway, and it continues to exist in its own dimension. It isn't dead. How cool is that? Problem solved. Your mirror self has your deep innermost feelings. It is, in effect, your soul. In the morph, you can actually see it. Imagine the thrill of seeing your soul. It doesn't seem credible, but it's in there. In the Bible, it talks about people losing their souls, but in the perpetual memory of the mirror world, I don't think you could lose your soul. It's eternal. In 1930, Paul Dirac discovered a mirror world of antiparticles that is opposite to this solid world. Dirac's mirror world doesn't look any different to our 3D solid world, except the antiparticles are of an opposite charge. Your antiparticle self would look like your twin. It is thought that at the beginning of time, the negatively charged antiparticles destroyed the positively charged particles. So what we see as our universe is the remnant of those explosions. Scientists speculate that there must have been a slight excess of positive particles over the negative antiparticles. The ratio is estimated to be one extra positive particle in every billion particles. So you're one in a million. Well, 1,000 million, actually. You should write down those things that are tormenting you. You have to learn to love your tormentors because they're you. And in placing blame on others, what you're really doing is blaming yourself. And if you see inadequacy in that person, then it's your own inadequacy that you're projecting. If you feel that these people are being dishonest, it's because you've always been dishonest. In England, you'll meet a villain in the pub that's complaining about how rotten and dishonest people are in the neighborhood because they stole his hubcaps, you know? And I used to laugh because I know this guy, like, lives by thieving. And he goes, "Oh, Stuart, it's bloody awful, mate. You know, they're terrible. They're stealing me hubcaps. I don't know what's happened to this society nowadays." And I'm thinking, "Yeah, but what about you, Bubba? Because you're out there clambering around the roofs on a Saturday night stealing people's TVs." But it's that, you know, we complain about the very thing that's inside us. We hate people that we love. When you hate a person, what you really mean is there's something about them that you love. They have something you want. One of the steps of the journey beyond enlightenment is to begin to own what you're looking at. Begin to own your own emotions. Again, as I said, it's all to do with the resonance of the imprint of your feelings. And so if you hate them, it's because you hate yourself. Or it's because they've got something you want. Or because you're jealous of them. Or because you feel that they're competing with you. But as I've always said, when a person wants to compete with you, let them. Let them win. Agree to be last. Go into the next race, the next game, the next whatever, and agree to be last. And if you're ahead and you're close to the line, trip over, fall down, lose your shoe, get lost, but make sure you don't win. Because it says, doesn't it, in the great book, the last shall be first, and the first shall be last. And most people don't listen. So they're up on the freeway 10 to 6 in the morning, and they're going up, 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 trying to be first. Hey, wait a minute, you don't want to be first, you want to be last. Last is the safest place to be. In talking about this inner torment that we create for ourselves, a lot of people suffer from the need to be perfect. And that usually comes from a projection that they received in childhood from their less than perfect mother and their less than perfect father. So if the father failed as a football player, he wants his son to become the world's greatest, and he'll torment his son to make it to the Super Bowl. So we always get that need for perfection from our parents, or we get it from the people that you go to school with. So you feel you have to be perfect to compete with them. Don't compete with them. You know, they say, "Look, why aren't you looking perfect?" You say, "I don't like looking perfect. You look perfect. I'll look less than perfect. In me looking scruffy and terrible, it'll make you look more beautiful. Won't that help you? You know, I'm not competing with you." And so that's how we torment ourselves. We torment ourselves to be perfect. If you give up on being perfect, that's the same thing of agreeing to be last, agreeing to lose. You don't need to be perfect. We didn't come to be perfect. It's just a torment that you inflict upon yourself. It's a psychological tormentor for no reason at all. I have a dear friend of mine, and whenever he makes a big mess of something, he'll say, like, "Man, I'm sorry, but I just had a terrible wreck in your car. Love me. Love me." That's all he ever says. "Love me." You know, or he says, "Look, I'm sorry I offended you and I lost my temper. Love me. I'm sorry I'm late. Love me. I'm sorry I failed. Love me." And I'll tell you, one day I was in Florida and I decided to walk through the ghetto. And it was 2 o'clock in the morning. And I took my shoes off because being like a white man walking through the ghetto at 2 in the morning is a slightly dangerous experience for an English tourist. So I took my shoes off, actually, to disarm anybody, because why is this man walking along carrying his shoes? Anyway, I met a very nice man called Slim who took me through the ghetto, and I was there for 2 hours wandering around the streets, and I went to a bar with him and stuff. But about 4 o'clock in the morning, I wound up on the sidewalk outside the ghetto, like a block outside. And I didn't have any money on me because I'd given all my money away when I was in there. I went in there with, let's say, maybe $200 or $300 in my pocket. And when I came out, I realized I didn't have a dime. And I was in Sarasota and I didn't even know the address of my friend's house that I was staying at because he'd driven me there. I just knew what street it was off. Anyway, 4 policemen showed up and they were like standing over me asking me questions. Like, "Who are you? Why are you here? Why are you sitting on the ground? Why you don't have your shoes on and stuff, you know?" And they were really aggressive. And so I stood up and I said to these police officers very quietly but very softly, "My name is Stuart Wilde. I'm an English tourist. I've been wandering around the district here tonight visiting people. I said, I demand that you love me and protect me." And they all went really quiet. Like, I mean, I swear they had goosebumps, you know. These massive police officers that looked like the front row of the football team, all dressed in black with their guns and stuff. You know, we're not used to guns from England. You know, they looked at me and I said, I demand that you protect me and love me. And suddenly they just softened right up, you know. And finally they said, well, what do you need? And I said, look, I'm really stuffed because I don't know where I am. And I went into this neighborhood and I gave all my money away to various people who asked me for it. And I said, what I really need is a quarter so I can call my friend and ask him to come and collect me. So the guy gave me a quarter. I made a phone call and my mate showed up 15 minutes later. The policeman stood over me. They wouldn't leave me there because they said, you're going to get killed here. It's 4 a.m. And I said, I don't think so, sir, because I've already been wandering around here for a couple of hours. I didn't get killed 2 hours ago. Why would I get killed now? But they insisted. So these four guys, like the four horsemen of the apocalypse, were standing over me for 20 minutes until my mate showed up to pick me up. So, you know, when you're less than perfect and you stuff it up and you break the vase, you say, look, I'm sorry, I broke the vase. Love me. Just love me. I'm sorry I'm late. Love me. Sorry I was really grumpy. Love me. Sorry I didn't meet the deadline. I'll try harder next time. Love me. I'm sorry I wrecked your car. Love me. You've got to be careful not to use this love me routine as a way of being totally inadequate all of the time or fobbing people off, because the whole secret in life is you have to become a custodian of not only your own feelings but other people's feelings. So you have to put yourself in their shoes. And how do they feel about the fact you've wrecked their car? You can say, look, sorry, sorry, love me. And by the way, I'm going to get your car fixed. Or by the way, look, I don't have the money to fix your car, but what I'll do is I'll give you $100 a month for 3 years. You know, you have to tend to other people's feelings. So you can't use it as a way to fob people off or to be less than genuine. You've got to care for their feelings. But in many ways, if you go through the world demanding everybody loves you, they will. You know, I want you to love me. You know, if they're angry with you, you say, look, I really understand that you're angry and I'm sorry I've let you down, but love me. It automatically sets up that you do love in return. Love me. You know, love me because I'm frail. I'm totally frail. My little soul is really frail. My soul's been on a journey that maybe only 6 people have ever been on. It was unbelievably scary at times and it was really frail. But I have no knowledge. I have nothing to offer because I'm so frail. Who am I to say? People say, what do you know? Tell me what to do. You say, I can't tell you what to do. You know, I'm not God. I don't know what to do. What would you like to do? How does it feel? I'm not perfect. I don't know for myself either. I don't have a perfection to offer. I have no wizardry. I make softness in my own heart my wizardry. You know, I have no plan. I make walking gently every day my plan. What's your plan, man? I don't have a plan. That's my plan. You know, they say, why don't you have a plan? You say, because plan is yang, it's intellectual, it's expecting the same things to happen next week that happened this week. How many millions have been lost on the stock exchange on that kind of plan, you know? It doesn't work. You know, what's your plan? I don't have a plan. You know, what do you intend to do? I don't know. I haven't got any ideas. I may do nothing. So again, it's this idea, when you get to a crossroads, you don't know which way to go. You can struggle and you can tear and beat at your chest and pull on your blouse or whatever, trying to work out which way do I go. Excuse me, if you arrive at a crossroads and you don't know where to go, there's only one answer. Go nowhere. Stop. Pitch your tent. That's it. Stop right there. Don't go anywhere. Because if it's not in your feelings, if it's not coming through from the mirror self, it's not coming through from your soul, then why would you go anywhere? You say, but I've got to get there by 8 o'clock. And you say, get where? Don't go. Well, they'll be upset if I don't arrive. Just remember to ask them to love you. They say, why didn't you arrive at 8? You say, because I got to this crossroads and I wasn't sure. So I sat down and I met 3 men who were sick. So I stopped to heal them. And one of them was crying. So I held him in my arms for an hour. He might have cried a bit less and got finished a bit sooner, but he didn't. So I came when I finished. Then I walked a mile up the road and I realized I'd left my shoes behind. So I decided I didn't need the shoes and I thought maybe one of those men would like the shoes instead. Didn't you go back for the shoes? No, I didn't go back for the shoes. What will you do without shoes? I'll walk in bare feet. What will you do if you lose your left leg? Hop, hop. Do you need legs? Well, I'd like to have legs, yes, but if I don't have legs, I'll crawl around. What if you can't see? Well, I don't know, I'll learn Braille. What if you die? How do you know that living is better than dying? What if you're not here? If I'm not here, I'm not here. And if I'm here, it's beautiful. If I'm not here, it'll also be beautiful. Love me. Just love me. To conclude this session, I can say I'm almost certain that you will see the morph because it's everywhere. And this series will act as a doorway for you. There's a mechanism of alignment available to you. It's just in the knowing. There's a sort of amnesia that goes on. And of course, in childhood, we see all sorts of beings and all sorts of magical things that later in life as grown-ups, we'd completely gloss past. I remember visiting with a truly, truly legendary shaman, an ayahuasca shaman from South America, you know, from the South American tradition. And I was saying to him, are all these beings real? Are all these experiences real? And he was saying to me, it's all real, Stewie. It's all real. It's just you pretend that it isn't real. So you will have lain in your bed and you would have seen beings walking through your room. But because it was ephemeral and it was at the side of your vision and you just glimpsed them, you made nothing of it. You know, strange coincidences, you kind of brush them off. But hey, there aren't any coincidences. That's all part of the geometry of your destiny, your life. I should reiterate here that it's in the silence, it's in the softness that you learn. That's how you get to this femininity. That's how the right hand laces the left hand. The yin moves in between the spaces of yang. I've read a lot of books, I've studied a lot of stuff, and I'm knowledgeable of, let's say, metaphysical spiritual writings. But almost everything I've ever learned, I learned in the morph. But the morph is very feminine. The morph is water. It looks like water. So the morph is the feminine spirit. It's the presence of the feminine spirit that has descended upon our planet. So it's in the silence. It's in the softness. And again, if you have a lot of obligations, you might say, well, Stewie, I don't have a lot of time for silence. Okay, I understand that. But in the few moments of silence you have, just touch inside your heart and breathe in and hold that breath and imagine yourself spreading to the outside of the universe faster than the speed of light. You can embrace the entire humanity, planet, solar system, and the universe, and then breathe out and breathe in again. And so if you only have 10 minutes of silence while you're waiting for the train to come to take you to work every day, use that 10 minutes, not listening to your mind rambling on about the mortgage payments, but a soft moment where you connect with the God force within, where you remember the nostalgia that you have for eternity. Eventually, you should be able to access those other worlds just by knowing how to do it. It comes to you. It's like a click of the mind where you see what others don't see. It doesn't take a rocket scientist, but it does take a certain amount of courage. For as I've said before, there are places deep inside you that you have yet to discover and unearth, and you have to allow that to come out and understand it. But that is all part of the heroic compassion of self I spoke of, and an understanding that none of us is perfect. We're all white and some black. So as a spirit, you and I are mostly grey, neither a saint nor a devil, someplace in between. We're all fallen angels doing our best. Get up, Trinity, get up. Let's move on. We don't seek perfection. There's no such thing. We only seek to redeem ourselves, and hopefully we will help others realize the same peace and redemption. This is what this is all about, deliverance. Deliverance from evil, deliverance from dark influences, many of which you can't see now. I'll talk about the inner and outer matrix in the fourth session, and deliverance from the despair and confusion of a lack of understanding, back to the light, and an eternal happiness and peace. You look inside the morph in a meditative state, and you lie still and wait and see what visions and information it offers you. And all you need is to try the exercises I suggested and raise your energy a bit if you have to, and you'll see it right away. There's a mechanism at work here. So the very fact that you bought this audio series or you got them from a friend says that that was your destiny to do so. And so that means a chance will be offered to you. Not by me, of course, as I don't have the power of yes and no over humanity, but by the forces of light that operate the hidden door I spoke of. Some people see the mirror world easily, as a continuous series of actions playing in their mind's eye like a video clip, and others don't see it right away, but they do see pictures bit by bit as visions. and the story of that world and their reality in it starts to unfold, usually as fast as they can embrace the gap that I spoke of previously. Let's go to the next session where I'll talk to you some more about the memory of things and the resonance that you leave behind you as you go along. Thanks.